Om Jai Gurus, Jai Gurus, Jai Gurus. Victory to God in the forms of our Blessed Guru, Blessed Guru lineage, saints and sages of all religions. Bless us that we may rise into the divine consciousness even as Thou hast. It is our sincerest desire and wish that we be ever one with You. Refine our purpose. Make us steadfast. Make us pure in body, mind, and spirit. Jai Gurus. So lovely to be broadcasting from Oregon Pipe State Park, where the south part of Arizona. We can look across and see Mexico just a few miles away, so we're down far south. Doesn't mean it's particularly warm compared to the north it is, but we've had some cool days and nights here. Reading from the posting this morning, I myself do nothing, and a beautiful picture. We're so fortunate to have these wonderful pictures we can draw upon of Arjuna sitting in chariot, Krishna charioteer, and he's being steady and poised in action as he draws his arrow. Since my early 20s, I've had two favorite scriptures that have inspired me, stayed with me, and been my friends and guides these many years. They are the New Testament sayings of Jesus and the teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the terms of pure poetic imagery and concise truth, these two avatars are truly amazing. I have never made a study of either of these from an academic viewpoint. Rather, I use them for inspiration. I may have read through them from beginning to end a few times, if at all, but I am much more likely to pick up the narrative at God's prompting and latch on to a few verses. Soon I have the inspiration I need. My soul is lifted on these scriptural wings that elevates my consciousness and delivers me into heavenly realms. Finally, my soul merges into spirit. Self becomes self. This morning I pick up the Gita and my eyes rest upon this. It's the Gita chapter 5, verses 8 through 10. The cognizer of truth, united to God, automatically perceives, I myself do nothing. Even though he sees and hears, smells, touches, eats, moves, sleeps, breathes, speaks, rejects, holds, opens and closes his eyes, realizing that it is the senses, activated by nature, prakriti, that work amid sense objects. Like unto the lotus leaf that remains unsullied by water, the yogi who performs actions, forswearing attachment, and surrendering his actions to the infinite, remains unbound by the entanglement in the senses. Like unto the lotus leaf that remains unsullied by water, the yogi who performs actions, forswearing attachment, and surrendering his actions to the infinite, remains unbound by the entanglement in the senses. That is a magnificent sentence. There are times when it seems that Jesus is quoting Krishna, such as when he says, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you know that I am he, and that I do nothing myself, but as my Father taught me. It's from John 8:28. Let us take this idea. It is not I who acts. In fact, this I is both what Krishna and Jesus start with, I do nothing. The I has gone through a change from the one acting into a witness of what is being done. The lifting up of the Son of Man is the transformation that leads us from ego consciousness to being united with God. You may sense in yourself how fundamental this notion of doership is to your nature. I am doing this, feeling this, thinking this. From a purely human standpoint, if you do not have this sense of being the doer, you are labeled with a dissociative disorder. However, feeling like you are unconnected with your body or its actions because of psychological trauma is not what is being described here. No, this state of consciousness comes as an earned experience. It is an advancement in the psyche, not a setback. You can begin to get an idea of this state through practicing being the witness of what you are doing. Many years ago, I read a book, Zen in the Art of Archery, by Eugene Herigel. In it, he describes the discipline of the Zen monk watching himself go through all the motions of shooting a bow and arrow. Sounds easy enough. Nothing can be further from the truth. It is years of practice, observing every movement of muscle, stringing the bow, setting the arrow, pulling the string, bending the bow, aiming at the target, and finally releasing the arrow. Everything is done with full mindfulness, without the mind wandering here and there, totally focused on the action being performed. When done correctly, shooting a bow and arrow becomes meditation. You are the witness. Then something extraordinary happens, the Zen state of mind. While reading this book, I decided to do my own kind of witness practice. When I was doing the simplest tasks, I observed myself in the doing, every muscle being moved, the sensation of moving in space, sounds in the room, breathing, even the heart beating. Everything was to be noted by the observer within. And what did I experience? Physically and mentally, I slowed down. I was aware of minute movement. And something more, my consciousness moved from the doer to the observer. The practice shifted me into a meditative state as the body continued in its action. It is very nice. Through time and experience, this practice took on new dimensions. Even though I was no longer practicing as inspired by the book, rather, being the observer took on its own life. I felt that prakriti, the power of nature, was moving through me. Prana, or life force, was doing the work through this body. Then another level of awareness. It is God, the supreme power and intelligence that is beyond nature, that is acting, speaking, and even thinking through this form. I have to say, these are magnificent realizations to be had. They change your life, and if you let them, they transform you. The Son of Man in you is lifted up. You become the cognizer of truth, united with God. In that union, you know in truth the statement, I do nothing, it is my Heavenly Father who doeth the works. Now, everything that is said and done through this form comes through the witness from a much higher source. When any aspirant lifts up the human consciousness, the Son of Man, into the divine consciousness, our Heavenly Father, then you know the same transformation, the same truth. Whatever happens to the body and the world becomes like water slipping off the enameled leaf, leaving the inner Son of Man ever in oneness with the Heavenly Father. That wonderful. And then I'd like to read from Master Isay, isn't that wonderful? My own writing, isn't that interesting? I don't feel like it's my own writing, though. I truly feel like it's God who's writing through this form. And you know, sometimes when I read it, I learn something new. Or when I'm writing it as well. These are the same verses that I quoted from, but Master's commentary. I haven't read them, so we'll see how they match up with what I just wrote. The yogi who can retain ecstatic union with God in his wakeful states realizes that when he works with the five instruments of knowledge, the senses of seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, and tasting, it is God in the aspect of Mother Nature who is employing these five instruments. Working through with the five instruments of action, the anus, the genitals, hands, feet, and organs of speech, The yogi similarly feels the cosmic deity to be operating through those organs. Perceiving his five life forces, those involved in inhalation and exhalation, in cleansing of poisons, in bodily metabolism, in circulation and in assimilation, concentrating on the senses or withdrawing his attention from them, work performed by the mind, or utilizing the instrument of discrimination employed in dreaming and in perceiving inner and outer wisdom. The yogi realizes that he is not doing anything, that all bodily activities are being carried on not by any personal physical power, but by the 19 elements of the astral body, which in turn is guided by the ideational sheath, which in turn is the sheer thought of God. You see, their master goes through this successive layers from the body, and then the 19 elements of the astral body, and then the ideational sheath, the ideas that have created you, which in turn is the sheer thought of God. This can sound very abstract and even obtuse in our thinking when we don't relate it to things that we experience on the everyday level. If you have developed in your consciousness, you may be walking through the woods, you may be in a group of people. It varies with different people as to what is the easiest access. But let us say you're walking through the forest. I remember a time when I was doing such. And what I saw in the trees with the inner vision is the life force in the trees that was flowing up with the sap, that was springing out in life through the limbs and through the leaves. It was the act of life force that was going on in nature all the time. Physical scientists are oftentimes looking at cellular structure, looking at chemical interactions, and perhaps even down to the atomic and even the subatomic levels. But for the yogi, for the one who's developing consciousness, there's even a deeper layer to perceive this nature from. And you see life force working in everything and everyone. Nobody could have their life, their intelligence, their ability to think and move, even if they are doing wrong action. It is all coming from that supreme source of life, which is God, ultimately, who expresses himself through Prakriti, or Mother Nature, who then animates everything that we see and hear and feel on this physical level. And so it is life force that moves through. Now, as Lari Mahasaya tells us, there are two levels of life force. There is, you might say, prana with a small p. In fact, he spells it with a small p. And prana with a capital P. And the prana with the small p is what we might call ordinary life force. That which moves through your body and through the cells and keeps you functioning, keeps you thinking, keeps you moving in this world. Then there is prana with a capital P, and that is divine life. And divine life is activated in you through the spine. And particularly when your kundalini is lifted up in the spine, then this active force starts to operate inside of you. We sometimes refer to this as grace. So grace is moving through us, and this is the power, the ability to lift us up beyond the human sense of things only and bring us into the divine life. This is the great transformation that we are seeking to do. Now, when you sit in meditation and you are feeling a great sense of peace, you're feeling a great sense of connectedness with God, you are on the cusp of feeling this capital P, prana. When you are lifted up in the bliss of God, and you are under powerful forces within Him, and they are changing you down to your very cellular structure, then you are involved with the divine life force that is moving throughout your being. So this is a very interesting thing when we go through this transformation, that we are no longer just under the jurisdiction of the material forces, but we are now involved with divine forces that are active within us. And this explains why sometimes we can be out of sync with this world. You go through a period of time when you feel like that this body and what you are doing and the world itself is but a dream. And it is a kind of dissociative kind of feeling when you have it. You feel that what is going on inside of you is the reality, and that is how it is different from a psychological state of dissociation. In a psychological state, you're in a neutral zone. You're just simply observing, and you feel like you're separate from everything. When it is in a spiritual experience, you feel the divine life, you feel God, you feel the divine presence in you and operating through you. And your consciousness is being transferred to the spiritual body. We go through different transferences as we go through these spiritual experiences. As you go through the first part of the mystical crucifixion, you are lifted up in divine consciousness, but then you are also tested because this life force going up through the spine is triggering the different spinal centers, left and right, positive and negative, up and down. And so as you rise up, you get these resistive forces coming at you. These are the tests that Jesus goes through. And they try to lure him to go back into material consciousness. If you bow down and worship me, says the devil, I will give you fame, I will give you fortune, I will give you power in this world. We can all think that we would pass something so easily, such a test. But when it comes to our own test, it hits us in those soft spots, you might say. Those places where we didn't expect it to come. And we think, well, this isn't a spiritual experience, this is real life. And the fact is that spiritual experiences hit you on every level. The material level, the social level, the business level, every level. And it is not that everybody has to leave their hearth and home and job and their loved ones in order to go on this grand adventure with God. But inwardly, we have to be willing to. We have to be willing to let go of our attachment. I know when I was going through this, I was surprised at some of the things that I felt attached to that I didn't think I had any attachment to at all. And one of them was my home, and when God asked me to give up my home. And I realized part of my identification was with my home. And so I had to leave that and let that go. My profession. And I had invested a great deal of time and money and effort and had gotten into a place professionally that I had desired to get to for quite a while. And just as I was arriving and it was all working out exactly as I thought it might, and I had no idea that I would leave my job at some point, except maybe when retirement came along. But God had other things in mind. And he prompted me to leave. And I didn't know how I would be supported. I didn't know anything about the new life before me. But interestingly, I didn't feel concerned about it. I just thought, well, this is the next stage that God is taking me on. And so I gave notice, and 3 months later, because I had clients and I had a lot of things that I had balancing, and I didn't want to just get up and leave. I wanted to do it correctly. So as I zeroed in on the time of leaving, everything got done and in the order that it should. And so I was all ready to go, but where to go? And then Peter said that he had built an apartment for me in a part of his garage. It's a beautiful thing. Everything he builds is beautiful. And the wood was all beautiful, and the kitchen, and it was small, but it had high ceilings, and it was perfect. It was exactly what I needed. And so he gave me yogi rates. So I was quite fortunate with that. And then I was going to go to India. And Phyllis, God bless her heart, she sponsored my trip to go to India. And I was standing there talking to Peter, and I was telling him about going to India and that I'd never been, and of course he had never been. And we were talking like that and about what would happen perhaps and all the rest of it. And he's standing there with a hand in his pocket, and suddenly he pulls his hand out and he hands me a 10 rupee note. And I think, well, that's interesting. I've never even seen a rupee note before. And then Peter goes on to tell me, and I still have this 10 rupee note. He goes on to tell me he has no idea where that rupee note came from, that he's never seen one before. And he was just as astounded as I was that it was in his pocket. And how do you explain, as brand new, as crisp? And how do you explain such a thing? God is just so loving in all the ways that he takes care of us, in all the ways that he demonstrates that he is with us when we are with him. Because that's something very important. We have to live in harmony first with his law, with his love, with his inner direction. We cannot expect that we'll just simply go our own way and do our own thing, and that God will somehow come in and scoop us up and do all the work for us. We ourselves closed the door at one point in our existence. We closed the door to God. We closed the door to grace. We closed the door to light. We did it because we wanted to have this experience in life. And if you don't like your life, if you don't like the things that are coming at you, you have one place to go. Look in the mirror. And you'll see the one who instigated. Now, it may have not been this body, but it is your soul, and it is who you are. God has absolutely proved this to me, because time and again, I found myself either facing something inwardly or facing something in the outer world, and he has shown me the connection of how something that I had done in the past had resulted in what was going on now. And whether you accept that or not, simply accept that what is being given to you is for your own highest good, that God is orchestrating it. And you think, well, why is God orchestrating something bad, something difficult? And it is to bring out the strength in you. God showed me one time how that every circumstance he puts us into, he gives us adequate and more than adequate grace to be able to either overcome the difficulty or to be able to endure it and keep our minds on him. Some things we just simply have to go through. We think, wouldn't it be nice if God just reached down with his magic wand, touched me on the shoulder, and everything in my life was changed and easy? Now, God could do that, but it's not to your benefit. Just even as you go out and exercise the body, and what does the body do in response? It builds blood vessels, it builds stronger bones, it responds to the need. Because you need stronger bones, you need bigger, more vigorous blood vessels. They are built in response to your demand. And even so, when God puts demands on us, through things that he puts us through, they're done with a very specific reason. Now, there's been a devotee who's been going through a really tough time. And God showed me very definitely one of the things that devotee was learning was that they were not alone. They had support. They didn't have just God's love and support, but those around them. And this was important as hitting a spot inside of them, something that needed to be talked to, touched, healed. Sometimes I say this has been a rough couple of thousand years. And it has been. You look at history, and it's not that everybody was in equally dire circumstances. People did very well during this time. But many did not. And there were famines, and there were pestilence, and there was a lot of lack, and there was poor hygiene, and there was shorter lives, and all the rest of it. Many children died early in life. And it was a tough time. One reason it's called the Dark Ages is because there's so little recording of that time. And so historians don't know always what to make of things because things just weren't written down. Because reading and writing had become almost extinct. And so we lived through those times. I know that I did. And I know that there was some tough times in there. And because of that, sometimes we have fear of starvation, even though we've always had plenty to eat in this lifetime, but you wouldn't know it. Because some part of the inner self feels like starvation is either here or just around the corner. You feel afraid of different things. Some people have fear of heights, even though they've never had any large falls in this lifetime. Other people are afraid of certain insects. I have been going through my notes from India, and I was so thrilled when I had the darshan of a snake. It was a beautiful golden snake. I can picture it exactly as it was coiled up. It was approximately 3.5 feet long. It was as I was walking up towards the Arunachala block where my room was. And as I walked up, I had wanted the darshan of a snake. And I hadn't had one. And so God gave it to me. And I walked up, and he's coiled up there. And head was raised a bit, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we were maybe 10 feet across from each other. And I just felt thrilled because I was having this snake. And later on, Swamiji told me, because I didn't know that cobras could be golden color. And this, he said, that was a gold color cobra. And that made me even more thrilled because that's what I had wanted to see. But I told a few people there because I was thrilled about it. And there was a lady who was a lovely, lovely devotee. And she's recently left the body, and I feel sorry for that. She was living there at the ashram for many years. And she was one of the first Sanskrit scholars for a woman that was there. Normally, before that, they wouldn't train women as Sanskrit scholars. But there was a Sanskrit guru who would initiate people and teach them Sanskrit. And she was one of those. And she was a lovely, lovely soul. She'd been a school teacher before that. But I told her about that, and it made her so afraid to come out. Every night, the electricity would go off for a half an hour, and it would become unbearably hot in the room, so we would both meet out in the courtyard underneath the moon or the stars. And it was always lovely to see her, and she stopped coming out, and I thought, well, maybe she's doing something else. So I asked her a few days later when I saw her. And she said she was afraid to come out because of what I had said about that snake. She didn't want to encounter it in the darkness. And I was sorry for that. I was sorry I didn't know what the impact of was my telling her that. So you never know what kind of fear. Sometimes people are afraid of one thing or another. There is a big strapping Westerner there, 6'5". He had been a world-class athlete. He had been a bicycle rider. And he had gone through a very unusual accident. He was riding his competition bicycle, and a truck hit a car, and the car flew and hit him. And it gave him such injuries that he couldn't ride competitively anymore. Anyway, he was this very good-looking, big, strapping guy. And I saw him one day at the ashram there. We had had a couple of conversations, and he said, in all seriousness, he says, there was a moth last night, and I was scared to death. And I thought at first maybe he was pulling my leg, but he was looked so serious, so sincere. And he said, I just kept on looking at that moth. Then I thought, well, the fan is blowing, and as long as the fan is blowing, he's not going to come at me. So I guess I'm all right, and eventually he's able to go back to sleep. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Absolutely terrified of a moth. And somebody else may laugh at such a thing, but then they may have their own fears that somebody else would laugh on. So it's not a laughing matter when somebody has these fears. They're real, in the sense that not necessarily would that moth attack him, but the fear is real. And so we focus in on the fear. We say, all right, God, I'm having this fear. Now, what am I going to do with it? And we enlist the aid of God with us. You know, oftentimes when we feel like we're not at our best, are the times when we're likely to think, I'm on my own here. God is not with me. Why would God bother about this? He's busy running his universe. But the interesting thing about omnipresence and omniscience and omnipotence is that God is in you and is just as concerned about you as any other part of his universe. And so you can enlist his aid. He's an active participant in this life. Some people don't think so. They think this world has just been wound up like a clock and set off to go. Maybe like one of those little bunnies that you wind up and it just hops and hops and hops. And eventually it runs down, and that's what this universe is. But that's a very mechanistic way of looking at this universe, and it's not the truth. There is a mechanistic aspect to this universe. But the truth is that God is actively manifesting as his truth moment to moment, day by day. And if you will open yourself to it, his love and his grace and his intelligence is actively pouring out to you. And so you take that sore spot, you take that soft spot, you take that part of you that you yourself may view with contempt or ridicule. You think that you shouldn't be having it. In truth, you shouldn't be, in the sense that you are God's own child made in his perfect image and likeness. And so from that standpoint, yes, it's something that should not be part of you, and yet you find that it is absolutely a part of you. So you enlist the aid of God. You say, listen, God, you see what my predicament is here. You created me. You created the predicament. Now you must help me solve this. I'm all in. I'm here to do my part. But you must help me. You are the supreme power. You are the intelligence. You are the everythingness. And I am asking, I am demanding that you put your attention on this and that you operate through me, through my intelligence, through my will, and heal this problem so that it never comes back to me again. Because that's what you are here for, don't you see? You're here to heal that exact problem. You think, well, if it wasn't for that, I'd be about my sadhana, I'd be about my search for God. That is your search for God. That is your way through, is the very problems that we encounter. They're not an obstacle to your spiritual growth. They're the very means for your spiritual growth. Because through going through that and enlisting God's aid and reaching out to him, in a way that you know now that perhaps you didn't know when that situation originally happened, then you change the nature of the effect that it had on you. What before had bothered you now no longer bothers you. And you may even wonder, what was all the fuss about? And yet when you were in the midst of it, it was a real problem. And it can dominate you night and day. But God is equal to everything that you go through. He will help you. He can cure you if it be his will. it is not always His will. If you think about the life of Jesus, for every person He cured, there were thousands of others who were not. So those were the ones that God directed Him to help with. And sometimes God leaves you in a tough situation. But it's not to punish you, and it's not to make you feel bad. It's to wake up the divine consciousness, the divine power, the divine intelligence that is latent inside of you, that is awaiting for you with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength, to ask God for help in this, to help you to heal it, to rise above it, to merge and become one with Him. This is the power of grace inside of you. And then, having been lifted up, having been transformed and changed, then you are like the enameled lotus leaf. You look at the lotus and they're quite beautiful. They're sitting out in the body of water. And you see the leaves, they look like they're floating on top of the water. And you see a little tiny droplet on that leaf. And it is like an enameled surface. It doesn't penetrate in. It stays as a perfect little droplet of water. And perhaps it stays there until it evaporates, or perhaps it just rolls off and goes back into the water again. All of life's troubles, everything that this world presents to you, becomes like those little droplets of water. Now, God may call upon you to do something about something. It may be for somebody else, it may be in your own life to change something. And then you go about your work of doing that. But it doesn't penetrate into that interior part of your being where you and God are one. That is an inviolable place that is just strictly between you and God. And nothing of this world can wedge its way in there and separate you unless you let it so. Do not let it be. Do not let it go to that place. Call upon the strength of God, the intelligence of God, the power of God, the light of God, that you may stand strong with God, and that these things just simply roll off of you. You know, you can just imagine that you have a field around you, a powerful field of light, and that the vibrations of this world just pass right on by you. You don't have to absorb everything like taking a punch or a blow. You really don't. You can strengthen that shield that's around you. People with lower vibrations, people with anger or hate or fear, they do not need to penetrate into you and have you be like a sponge just soaking it all up. Now, there is a time in your development when you feel a keen sensitivity on a psychic level to the people and things around you. And what is important to remember when that happens is that the light of God inside of you is more powerful than anyone else's vibration or the world itself. And that putting your mind upon God and letting that light radiate out from you will help to insulate you from that sensitivity towards the things of the world. And so that's an important thing to remember, because when we go through that, we can feel like we are a punching bag and that everything is just coming in and just going after us. But it's an in-between state, you see. It's not the final resting place, so don't let yourself just get caught up in that. Keep moving forward. Keep bringing more God out. So whatever your problem is, maybe you're having difficulty with meditation, and you sit down to meditate, and your mind is just all over the place. And so you just take a minute, and you go aside, and you say, "Listen, God, look at what my mind is doing here. Look at what my emotions are doing here. They're all over the place. I can't call this meditation. Nobody would. I'm just sitting here obsessing on this and that and the other thing. We've got to take this in hand. You are the power in this universe. You're its intelligence. You're its light. You must come into this temple. Shine that light, that intelligence, that power. Radiate it so powerfully that all these dark shadows would just be simply seen as mere phantoms that have no power. And as soon as the light comes on, they scatter. They can't take it. In the Bible it says that the light, the darkness hateth the light. It's not just neutral to it. You bring light in, and the darkness runs away. And this is the truth. And the reason that you feel that you are victimized by some of these forces at times is simply because it is God activating inside of you more power, more strength, more God, more light. You see? See how this works? And so you instigate that. You become absolutely determined. Sri Yukteswar very much wanted Master to teach prayer demands. Said, we don't go to God as a beggar. Please give me this. Oh, won't you give me a little of that? I know I'm a miserable sinner, but perhaps you can just deign to give me something here to help me. Nothing like it at all. You are the child of God, made in His likeness and in His image. You are intended from the very foundation of this universe to be a manifestation of His light and power and grace. That is what God wants for you. He wants you to stand up on your own two feet. He wants you to walk as a bearer of light in this world. And the only way you can do that is for Him to be manifesting Himself inside of you. That's the only way. So He doesn't want you to come as a mamby-pamby and maybe, and you come with a demand. God, you made me, you made this decision, you fix it. I'm all in here, I'll do my part. It's not that I just sit on my hands. But you activate yourself in me, you show me, you guide me. You tell me what to do. You give me the power to do it. And I'm all in. I'll do everything in my power. Excuse me. I'll do everything in my power. But you must ultimately do it. And when you take that attitude, you activate God. You know, sometimes God is like the yeast inside of a bread, and you warm it up. You warm it up with your prayer demand. And that activates the seeds that are inside of you. And God, more than willing, He loves it. He loves it when we talk tough to Him. Demand of Him. Proclaim our inheritance from Him. In order to serve Him, in order to shine His light in this world, in order to manifest His goodness and His peace and His purity wherever we go. He loves that. He loves a willing instrument. God gave me the image one time of a pen, a writing pen. And how if you were the author and you're writing along, but the pen had its own ideas of what it wanted. Not very good ideas, but it had its own ideas. And suddenly it started scribbling off to this side and that side and make a mess of things. And that's what the ego is like. The ego is intended to be the witness. That what witnesses what God does in and through us. But instead it's taken over the show. It says, I'd like to run this show. It has no idea what it's doing. And oftentimes it just writes gibberish. But how God loves a fine writing instrument. One that will go with every little caress, every little nuance that he wants to write in the book of life. The ink flows smoothly. There's no limit to it. And it does exactly as he is moving its hand, moving his hand to it. You get a feeling for that? How beautiful that is? What a beautiful relationship that is. And you are that writing pen in God's hand, writing in the book of life what he wants to write. And sometimes, because your perspective is you're just down on the sheet of paper, you don't know what the whole novel is going to say. You just know that there's no place you'd rather be than be held in God's hand, letting him write through you. And even if all he writes is Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram over and over and over again and fills the book of your life with that, what of it? Where else would you rather be? And it puts you in some pretty good company, you know? With Papa? Or maybe he writes Jai Gurus and he puts you with Master. Or maybe he writes, keep your mind on God, and he puts you with Mother. Pretty good company to be in. Whatever he chooses to write, it is your great love just simply to be there, to be held in his hand, to feel him writing through you. It is ecstasy, it is joy, it is perfection. But to do that, you have to let go of all the little favorite things of yours. Now maybe he continues to write with that too. But maybe he takes it and he throws it in the trash can because it's not his purpose in the moment. And so you have to be willing to let everything go and only tune in to him. Let us do that. And then we will be able to say, this is not me. It is not the I who is acting here. This is God. I am not the doer. God is the doer. I am the instrument of being done. And we feel the joy and the bliss and the light of him forevermore. All love and blessings. May God keep you. And when you throw prayer demands at him, with all of your strength, with all of your might, that he be willing and ready to answer your prayers and to lift you into that kingdom of heaven, where you'll merge your little self into his great self. And you will know once and for all that you are his and he is yours.